Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Talk Radio Europe presents Countdown to Brexit.
We've got an oven-ready deal, put it in the microwave. We can get a new deal. We're aiming for a new deal. I've looked carefully at no deal. That outcome would be a failure of statecraft. The people of this country deserve better from their leaders.
Buenos dias. Guten Tag. Bonjour. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the last in the current series of Countdown to Brexit. What? There's going to be more? Well, you know, Brexit ain't over. A lot of stuff has been, the can has been kicked down the road, to put it mildly. But the United Kingdom is out. It's obviously it was out of the EU on the 31st of January of 2020. But we're now out of the customs union and the single market, even though there's a deal on goods, but there isn't on financial services, which of course, makes up a larger part of, on services generally, financial services being a crucial part of that, even though that's a larger part of the British economy. So there will be people, even though the deal came out on the 24th of December, the 1,000, what's the amount of paper here, 1,429 pages or something. There's still quite a bit in it that lawyers and other people are scrutinizing to see exactly how it's interpreted. And I'm sure there will be court cases over the interpretation of specific details on that. Before we go to, we've got a couple of guests on today. Before I tell you about that, just this thing, a few of you have been telling about incidents and it's been doing the news that those of you, as things stand, because of coronavirus, COVID-19, then people from the UK are not allowed to enter the European Union, essentially. But in Spain, you can only enter if you've had the PCR test within 72 hours, filled out the health form 10 days before with your seat number of your flight in there. So you have to do it in this order. Book your flight, then go to the relevant Spanish website, fill it in, get that certificate. Then 72 hours before, get your PCR test. And then you can fly to Spain as long as you're either a Spanish citizen or a Spanish resident. And there have been cases where, fortunately, I've not heard too many of them, but there have been cases where people have the green residencia, either the big A4 size green piece of paper or the credit card size piece of paper, and they've been turned back. There have been cases where they've not been allowed to board the flight in the UK, and cases where people have arrived in Spain, haven't had the TIE, the new modern, all shiny biometric one, and they've been sent back. Well, they're just wrong. The authorities that say that, whether it's a police officer, whether it's somebody working on a desk for an airline, I'm not necessarily blaming the individual. We all know that word, Jobsworth. If they were incorrectly informed, you know, and their boss told them, you absolutely do not let anybody board that plane unless they have either A, a Spanish ID card, B, a Spanish passport, or C, a TIE, the Tarjeta de Identidad de Extranjeros. This is the case of some people on a BA Iberia flight to Madrid on Saturday night.
We've arrived here at the airport today, told we are not allowed to fly because we've got the wrong residency card. On our site, we were told you can use either or.
Yeah.
Here they're saying no, you have to have the TIE card. Absolutely gutted. We're going home. Spain is home. We class it as home.
So we've been checking the UK government website, making
Talk Radio Europe. Talk Radio Europe presents Countdown to Brexit.
Well, my apologies for that. This is most bizarre. I'll explain to you. We're friends, right? It's 8 minutes past 12, by the way. Is that I was due to have on now, and maybe the confusion will be resolved, but I was due to speak to Richard Corbett, who was the final leader of the European Parliamentary Labour Party. He was an MEP from 96 until the very end, until 2020, with a gap in the middle. He's just been awarded a CBE in the New Year's Honours list by the Queen, so congratulations to him on that. But I don't know if you caught the conversation between Giles Brown on the Costa del Sol and me here in Cologne in Germany, that saying this, Richard Corbett says, he's never heard of you, no idea what you're talking about. The bizarre thing about this is that I spoke to Richard on Thursday. So it would have been Wednesday or Thursday, the 29th or 30th of December, with a view to him coming on the programme today at a roughly 10 past 11 UK time. I can assure you folks that I'm not going mad. I mean, not for that reason. So anyway, we'll see if we can sort this out. But I mean, there's plenty of stuff to talk about. It's, you know, this is the last edition of Countdown to Brexit. Obviously, the subject of Brexit is not going to go away, but we'll be reverting to normal Europe Today, which, of course, has a plethora of subjects. Often it's, you know, reduced to one or two, like Corona or Trump, it was, or Brexit. But the ones that are exclusively Brexit, in a way, I felt a bit bizarre this morning because, and over the weekend, because I was trying to find a specific angle, you know, what is new, you know, in the news, because it was a bit of a whimper. You know, it was 11 p.m. on the 31st of December, UK time, so midnight Central European time, that the UK left. And there was an expectation that maybe there would be a sort of a wake from Remainers, some sort of, you know, public presence, maybe socially distanced outside Westminster or something like that, and perhaps some sort of celebration with Nigel Farage and co sort of popping, well, English fizzy wine, I guess, or champagne, I suppose. But neither of those things happened. The first, obviously, of January is a, you know, is a fiesta day. It's a national holiday in pretty much everywhere. It doesn't mean to say that lorries and so on, freight stops altogether, but it was to be expected that there wouldn't be the normal daily traffic, you know, a normal working day. And so all eyes were on the likes of Dover and Calais to see if we're going to see massive tailbacks. There wasn't much traffic, frankly. Today is, of course, a normal working day, albeit with COVID restrictions. So today is when we may start to see some change there. The UK government has said that it will be more relaxed. It's not the technical term, but more relaxed on lorries going into the UK than the European Union, i.e. France as the gatekeeper, and to some extent Belgium and the Netherlands, than they will the other way round. You know, they want to control the single market, but the UK, in order to not slow lorries down, has indicated that it's going to be light touch. The obvious question there is, so, you know, how does that square with controlling our borders? Finally, we'll be able to control our borders. So we haven't seen yet. Hopefully we don't. It'd be nice to be proved wrong with all these things, what people used to call Project Fear, and maybe some still do. But many of those things are turning out to be the case. Anyway, back to that story about the people not allowed to enter Spain because they didn't have the new biometric TIE.
Acceptable. And everything seemed okay. We had our PCR test for return. Everything looked okay. And we got to the check-in desk and was told the residency documentation I have, the green NIE card, is no longer valid.
Giles has just told me he has no recollection of you. I hope he's all right. It occurs to me, perhaps I've pressed a digit wrong when I spoke the other day and I said, hello, is that Richard Corbett? And somebody, maybe a prankster, you know, sort of thought, well, I've no idea who this is, but yeah, it's me. Will you come on air on Monday? Sure, you know, maybe, but I will. I've had his number for years. He's been on Talk Radio Europe before when we did a program called Brexit, Where Are We Now? Or something. We did a series of programs, about 8 weeks worth, in the lead up to the referendum in 2016. So I've had his number since then, and it's worked perfectly in the past. Anyway, I'm mystified. I'll phone him after the program, and I'll let you know tomorrow what bizarre thing has happened. So just to be clear on this, not everybody's had this problem of needing a TIE or being told they need a TIE to get back into Spain. One of my colleagues at Talk Radio Europe, she flew back to Spain yesterday or the day before, and I think I'm right in saying she hasn't got a TIE yet. She's got her Spanish residencia, the green piece of paper, and she got in no problem. That was flying to Malaga Airport from Birmingham to Malaga. So it's not universal, it's just that people don't know, but clearly that's not good enough. And just to eliminate any doubt, in July, the Spanish Secretary of State for Migration and the British Ambassador to Spain, they sat on a bench together in Madrid, right? A park bench, looks like, socially distanced, and they delivered a message. They told us what the rules were, but rather than play you that, just a reminder of what they said barely a week or so ago. This is in December.
Good morning. I'm Hanna Jalou, Secretary of State for Migration in the Spanish government, and I am pleased to be giving you this joint message today. Since July, when the Spanish government launched the new TIE card for British citizens here, more than 50,000 of people have already applied for the new card. From the Spanish government, we would like to keep on encouraging British nationals to exchange their green residency document for the new biometric TIE card, as it may speed up administrative processes and especially in the current situation border crossing. Having the new TIE is not obligatory, but it will make it life easier here in Spain.
Okay, the sound quality is not very good, but remember, here's what she said, just to make it clear. So the elimination of any doubt, this is from the government itself. This is the minister speaking, that it's not obligatory. It'll make things easier because it's biometric. It's got your photo on it and it's got one of those little chips, unlike just the piece of paper that's the green card. But, as she said,
and especially in the current situation, border crossing. Having the new TIE is not obligatory, but it will make it life easier here in Spain.
Okay, so it's not obligatory. And let me just jump forward on this. I think it's about 53 seconds in. The British ambassador, Hugh Elliott, is what he said. Let me just get you the right words.
It's great to hear, Secretaria de Estado. And it's important to be very clear. If you already have a green residency certificate, this document remains valid proof of your residency and of your rights under the withdrawal agreement. It's not obligatory to exchange it, and there's no hard deadline to do so either.
All right. Couldn't be clearer, could it? So I've sent a couple of people that video. I downloaded, it's on YouTube, but I downloaded it onto WhatsApp, converted it, and I've put it up on WhatsApp. If anybody wants that, you know, because at least you can carry it around on your phone, then anybody argues with you, you know, in an airport, I mean, it's at least one way. Say, look, this is the minister. Look, would that work? I don't know. But, you know, if the airline doesn't know the rule, the law, quite frankly, and you buy a ticket and you obey the rules and you've got all those, the relevant paperwork, the PCR test, the form, the health form, your residence certificate, your passport, all of those things valid, and you've paid for your flight. This was British Airways stroke Iberia, of course, the same holding company. And they refuse to let you board the plane because they have got it wrong. And then they don't compensate you. I mean, it's not just your money back. It might be all sorts of problems. You might not have any residency in the UK, you know, a family member close by. And so hotel bills and whatever. Then, well, it's my belief that, you know, they should compensate you. Well, they're refusing to do that. The last I heard, I mean, I smell a class action lawsuit coming on, wouldn't you? You know, if I were on one of those flights, I'd get together with other people that were in the same situation, get as a lawyer, no win, no fee, for example, no risk. I can't see how they would lose the case. Well, anyway, if you want to get in touch with me during the course of the programme, it's the same number that we use for Europe Today, but it's a different jingle. So I'll read it out to you. It's +34 722 177 507. That's +34 722 177 507. Let's go to some of your comments. Richard says, class action, lol. Well, you know what I mean. says, not only that, but certain trunk roads in France and Europe are banned to commercial vehicles on public holidays. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That's why it would have been quieter as well. When I drove from Germany, from West Germany, Western, to Poland, Rybnik in Upper Silesia, then I went on a Sunday, or I did the second bit, stopped in Leipzig, beautiful city of Leipzig, stayed in a hotel overnight, and then it's about 1,000 kilometers or something, the total thing, and then drove the second half on the Sunday. And that was perfect because the Saturday, the German bit of the trajectory, it was heaving. There were so many, I was going to say you wouldn't believe, but that's presumptuous, you would believe, so many lorries that, far more than I see in Spain, but I mean, traveling through Germany, heading towards Russia, judging by the number plates, Czech Republic, Poland, Russia, you know, another place, Slovakia, I guess. And it's absolutely full of them. Fortunately, that thanks to lovely EU money and German cohesion funds since reunification, then the motorways in eastern Germany are excellent. And in large swathes of them, they're three lanes. So the lorries occupy one lane and cars can, you know, use the other two. On Sunday, it was a dream. Nothing. No lorries, because as you point out, they're not allowed. Let me go back here. Let me see. Oh, there are lots. Thank you, Simon, for the New Year's picture. Graham in Arroyo de la Miel. I've seen this from a couple of people, I think. Boris Johnson saying, from midnight on June the 11th, 2037, we will move into Tier 74. You can no longer text people. You must communicate by Morse code only. We strongly recommend holding your breath for as much of the day as possible. Carolyn Murcia. Buenos dias, Stephen. Happy New Year. Good to have you back. Thank you. Happy New Year to you too. Was having Sunday lunch yesterday and got talking to the new waitress. Her husband was flying in from Manchester a few days ago to join her. Had a COVID test, booked in by Ryanair, no problem. Arrived at Corvera Airport. For those of you who don't know, that's Murcia's airport. Arrived at Corvera Airport a few days ago, and he and another guy were stopped at passport control and were told they couldn't enter as they didn't have Spanish passports. They were put on a plane back to the UK. What on earth is this? Unbelievable and scary. And then Carol's just added, me again. Met a couple I know, went to get their Spanish driving license and were told their green paper residence is not valid. Okay, well, a separate issue. Well, on the husband of the waitress that you met flying in from Manchester with somebody else, if they didn't have residencia, then yeah, you know, they would be sent back to the UK. Yeah. I'm surprised that they didn't check for that before leaving the UK at Manchester Airport. You know, it's absolutely fair for a Ryanair member of staff or the police, border guards, anybody in the UK to demand that you show either the TIE or the green card, you know, the green piece of paper. But the green piece of paper is just as valid. But if you haven't got either of them, then that's fair enough, you know. Not, you know, not the easiest thing in the world to go through, I'm sure, especially over the Christmas holidays. Mike says, yeah, he sent me a link to that story, you know, about the Brits living in Spain barred from Madrid flight. He says, Mike says, I despair. I suppose it was inevitable that this would happen. I'm definitely going to apply for a Spanish passport. Okay. You know, you don't need the Spanish passport, just the residencia, if you're already a resident in Spain, which obviously you are, because to apply for a Spanish passport, you have to have been resident in Spain for 10 years at least. Pay the money. It's not a fortune, I think, but go through all the hoops. Maybe some sort of criminal record check, I don't know. Do the Spanish language and culture test, wait a period of time, and then you should get it, you know. He says, I used to work at Alicante Airport back in the early 70s, and there were some jobs worth around then, but I thought they were a dying race. How mistaken was I? As I say, I don't know necessarily. Imagine you're on the desk and you don't know. You work in London or Manchester. You've never been to Spain in your life, for example. How would you know? They just tell you, if anybody going on a flight to Spain, they need to show one of these. And then they'll show them a TIE. And if they, you know, so not necessarily their fault. Leaf in Gibraltar says, on this Gibraltar deal, you know, it's been done between Gibraltar and Spain, or between the UK and Spain, with Gibraltar there, with veto power. This is the UK that's given Gibraltar veto power on any aspect of this deal. Leaf says, remaining now is to write the internationally binding treaty so that the PP or Vox can't come in and change the agreement later. The Frontier will work on the agreement in principle for up to 6 months, so no stamping of our passports. For the moment, the Spanish require a Gibraltar ID card or a 72-hour COVID test to enter. Okay. Yeah, the plan with the Gibraltar EU-UK deal, you know, with Gibraltar being in Schengen and the borders being at Gibraltar Airport or port, is it's going to Brussels, for sure. I mean, it is. That's the plan. And then the UK and the EU, so not Spain or Gibraltar, but Spain will be at the table with the EU, of course. The UK and the EU will formalise this into an internationally binding treaty. So, yeah, you know, the relationship between Gibraltar and Schengen, Spain, the European Union. So the PP or Vox, you needn't fear, because they couldn't come in and tear up an internationally binding agreement. They might point to the Tory party's attempt with the internal market bill. Pam in Dublin. Okay, I've seen this before. Congratulations, you've won £250 cash or a night at an Elvis Presley tribute show. To claim your prize, press 1 for the money or 2 for the show. There you go. Glenn and Carol in El Racó in Benidorm. It's similar to the one from Pamela. Says the new strain of COVID is now in New York. Scientists say if it can make it there, it can make it anywhere. I've seen this from Pat in Portlaoise in Ireland. Seen this a few times as well, but anyway, this is new to you. If they put the vaccine in beer and open up the pubs, the whole country would be vaccinated by next Thursday. Just trying to help. Good point. Jason, hello Jason, says, can you ask John, your very astute listener in fiscal matters, in his estimation, how many reserves financially globally remain to fight this battle against the virus? And what time span can we maintain this financial commitment in a protracted battle until money inevitably runs out? Well, that's the thing about money, is it doesn't run out, Jason. You just print more. I mean, you know, our society is based on debt, isn't it? So, in that sense. Phil in Almeria. Yeah, he sent me a thing. It's based on Ian Dunt and Alex Andreo. They do a podcast called, it used to be called Romaniacs. It's now called Oh God, What Now? Right. And yeah, it's just a quote from that, saying the dominant narrative is don't scrutinize this deal. It's all water under the bridge. When does accountability happen? This is a piss poor deal, even by its own standards. It's a base camp to us eventually getting closer and closer to Europe. And Ian Dunt says, that was Alexandria, Ian Dunt says, the withdrawal agreement was the first one where the EU got exactly what it wanted, and now the trade deal is the second. Yeah. You know, in that sense, I would put it in a sort of tangentially similar way, that when we were negotiating, then anybody sort of coming in and criticising the way the negotiations were going, from Keir Starmer to others, the argument was, you're undermining the UK. We're right in the middle of these sensitive negotiations, and you're being almost treacherous, treasonous, not defending your government. We're in the middle of these negotiations. Now is not the time. Once the deal is done, those same people say, it's water under the bridge, don't they? It was exactly the same with the Iraq war. When we're in the thick of it, now, you're undermining, you're endangering our soldiers' lives. The time will be later, not now. We'll have an investigation, you get all your committees and stuff, but not now, you're undermining your country. When it was over, I mean, is it really over still? But still, when it was over, then British, particularly remember Donald Rumsfeld in the United States, that's water under the bridge. That's yesterday's story. You know, that's old news, I think he said. So, yeah, there is a lot of that going on. Ron in Prague, the Czech Republic, says, Happy New Year, Steve. Just a heads up that I've read numerous messages on groups that I'm in of incidents involving expats since the 1st of January. These involve mistreatment of those who did the right thing regarding Brexit and others who thought, because they're British, that it didn't matter. Like what? I'd be interested to know, because we know the incident of, the people with the documents trying to get into Spain. But I'd be interested to know if there's something, you know, some paperwork they had to do and didn't. Lily on the Costa Blanca says, well, I'll save that. We've got Jill Rutter. Hopefully she remembers who I am. Well, coming up afterwards. Toby in Romford says, if that Richard doesn't know who you are, speak to Richard in London. Yeah. We had somebody DM, direct message Richard Corbett for me to see what the hell is going on. Frank in San Javier, that's in Murcia too, I believe, yeah, says, I recently came back from the UK after visiting family. I lost my TIE card in November, so I'd taken the denuncia with me. When I arrived back in Spain, I presented the denuncia to the official and was allowed in without any fuss. Frank in San Javier. Yeah, good for you. Well thought out. Yeah, so he lost his TIE. Congratulations, by the way, being one of the elite that's got the new one. I've still got the old one, you know, the green one. I'm not going to let them send me back to Germany or UK or whatever. Actually, yeah. Because I'd be flying from Germany to Spain, probably wouldn't count because it's not about nationality, but location, I believe. So for those of you who don't know, the denuncia, of course, he reported it to the police, as John in Mijas correctly reminds us from time to time, that, you have to physically go into a police station to do a denuncia, to register, the fact, and then they'll give you the appropriate piece of paper with all the stamps and so on. So that worked for Frank. John in Mijas has a good question. Maybe I'll put this to Jill as well. He says, it's a good question. Can Spain change the 90-180 days rule, or are they governed by the EU? For example, allow the swallows or holiday homeowners to spend more than 5 months here. Yeah. Oh, thank you. And inclusion.gob.es. Right. Okay. Look, you know what? I will send that to myself. I'll tell you what this is. Hang on. Forward message to, to AAA. That's me, my other account. Okay, so I've got that. So what John has sent me is, in fact, easier than the video. Like, if any of you or any friend or person that you know is in this situation, it's the actual PDF from the Spanish government, okay, that states quite clearly the residency rights of UK nationals under the withdrawal agreement. And it says documents that prove UK nationals are beneficiaries of it, and it's got it in Spanish as well. It's in English and Spanish. Documentos que acreditan la condición de beneficiarios del acuerdo de retirada. And it's got a TIE or a Spanish ID. It's the A4 piece of residencia paper or the credit card side piece of paper. It says any of these three. It says quite clearly that either of those is valid. So if anybody wants a copy of that PDF, I'll send it to you after the program is open. Okay, Phil has asked me for that video. Tony and Mafaron, I'm guessing that tourism to Europe is still on hold due to the new variant of COVID. When are these restrictions to be lifted? I can't tell you the answer on when they'd be restricted, but yes, because the UK is a third country now, not in the European Union at all. And because of its relatively high COVID rate, then British citizens are not allowed to fly into Europe. And I believe that's individual countries, and they're not obliged to do it. Brussels doesn't dictate, but they've come to an agreement with 27 member states that for now they're not allowing people flying from the UK into the EU unless they're either A, a citizen of the given country, or B, a resident of the given country. Ian in Camberley, several years ago I drove from Utrecht to Hanover from the German border. It was a snake of trucks on the slow lane from the whole of Europe for almost the whole four-hour drive. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of freight, isn't there? Paul says Johnson is too scared to lead, too scared to be unpopular. Lockdown is inevitable. Yeah, he seems to be more of a follower than a leader, wouldn't you say? You know what I mean? He'll eventually go to lockdown, or he'll eventually sign a deal with the European Union and that, but he doesn't lead. He's just sort of follow whatever the situation is. And with, you know, a pandemic, that can lead to serious problems, as we know. Paul on the Costa Blanca says, this is a temporary situation. We didn't get stopped at the airport because we cancelled our Christmas trip. Unless 100% necessary, why are people travelling? Every contact increases the problem. Yeah, fair enough. But these people, Paul, that have had this problem, they're travelling because they live in Spain. They're going home. That's why they're travelling. Andrew in La Manga says, is the TIE the same as the NIE number? My guess is it will be, but I don't know. Any of you out there, if you've got a TIE, is it the same number as your NIE? Because I know that my NIE and my NIF, my NIF number, fiscal number, and I believe my Spanish driving license number is all the same number. You know, it's me. So it would make sense that the TIE is the same number, wouldn't it? Pompey Gary says, Prospero Año Nuevo, first week after 20 years as an immigrant. Odd. Yeah. Now changing driving licenses, getting documents. You always had to, he says. Mistakes at airports are not policy, just mistakes. Yeah, but it's a pretty big one if you're not allowed to go home, isn't it? Right. Greetings from Pamela as well. Carolyn Murphy, another Carol. Hi, Stephen. They had the application for TRE. And were waiting as they only moved out 6 weeks ago. I see. This is referring to people. This is the guy, the two people who flew. Do you remember? They flew from Manchester to Murcia Airport, Corvera, on Ryanair. They had no problem booking in. And when they got to Spain, they were sent back to the UK. And these are the people that Carol's saying that they applied for the TIE, but they haven't got it. They only moved out to Spain 6 weeks ago. Yeah, you see, if it's the first time, if they haven't had residencia before, which judging by that they haven't, then that's a bit of an iffy one, because if they applied for it, I know there's a backlog because of Brexit, basically, compounded by Corona, but if they only applied for it, even if they got some sort of official-looking document to prove that, that, you know, doesn't necessarily mean that they'd be granted it, if they, you know. So that one is a bit more dubious, I have to say. June in Sofina says, in that audio from the couple going to Madrid, I thought I heard him say he'd shown his NIE. That's different to the residencia paperwork. Yeah, maybe he did, but that's true. An NIE is not good enough. It has to be a, you know, proper residencia. But in any case, June, there were other people on the plane who had the same problem who, you know, were definitely residentes. Okay, listen, we're going to have to go to a break. But messages, I'm really grateful for them, but they're absolutely stacking up. So Jan in Sevilla, thank you for your message. Brian Morgan, Leslie, Harry, Sue, Mike, Jacques, and more. I can't scroll up my screen yet.
Talk Radio Europe presents Countdown to Brexit.
Il est 12h42, and I'm delighted to have, possibly, I can't think of another candidate, possibly the best guest I think I've ever had on radio, who's consistently delivered the goods for us, and maybe now is contemplating retirement, now that we're fully out, and that is, of course, Jill Rutter from the UK in a Changing Europe. Welcome, Jill, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I mean, the retirement thing, I guess, obviously I'm teasing there.
I'm not so sure. The moment I'm allowed out, I certainly want to come down and see my my friends in Spain again and travel around a lot. But that looks a bit of a way off at the moment, I'm afraid. So, anyway.
Do you happen to know, a listener asked me, a couple of us, the restrictions, we know that coming from the UK to Spain because of COVID and plus Brexit, that you can only come back if you're either a Spanish citizen or resident. Yeah, do you happen to know if all 27 EU countries are doing the same?
I don't know. I know that I think those are individual country restrictions, depending on the COVID status that you have. I should imagine the Schengen's all in line. We had some British stories in the press this morning about some British tourists got to Amsterdam and were packed back on the next flight because that was deemed to be non-essential travel. So I think that's just one of the very early manifestations of being a third country now for EU purposes. So the Spain thing.
Yeah, we've had that in Spain as well.
A glitch with the not having quite the right documentation and the message not having got through from the Spanish authorities to the people checking at the airline or wherever that they would accept non-photo ID until everybody got their proper TIEs or whatever you're calling them. So I think, but I think it's country by country I would be checking, because we saw that actually in the early stage of the crises, countries were shutting up borders against other EU member states, even within Schengen. So I would I would check.
There's a sort of related thing. I'm putting you on the spot here, but a good question from a listener, from John in Mijas. And he's wondering, I know it's not your area necessarily of expertise, but you know the 90-180-day rule, as we know, you're allowed to go with a tourist visa, you know, to visa-less in a way.
Yeah.
At 90 days in every 180, unless you get a special business or work visa. Can an individual country in Schengen unilaterally change that? So, and the idea being that there are many people that are resident in the UK, but they have a holiday home in Spain, and they like to come and spend, you know, 4 or 5 months, for example, in one fell swoop over the winter period, for example. Can an individual country in Schengen change that and make it more relaxed?
I think that they can if they want, actually. So I think that it's one of the interesting questions about whether people will do bilateral deals to make things easier, because clearly there are some of these exchanges which are in both countries' interests. I know Spain is quite keen to still have Brits come and spend their money down there. And the UK quite likes, I think, the fact that it's cheaper to treat people living, older people maybe, who
older people
decided to move to Spain. They
impose
less of a burden on the NHS than if they were back in the UK. So I think we might see that potentially coming forward. But those sorts of things would now be bilateral negotiations between individual member states and third countries. Because basically, if it's not covered, you know, so the general rule is applying now. So I think that could be there, but it's not yet.
It's not yet. If, for example, Spain did do that and allowed, let's just for argument's sake, say 6 months in any 12, as opposed to 90 in every 180, if you see what I mean, you could do it all together, something like that. Would that mean that person would be restricted to Spain, that they would be, it wouldn't be legal if they, for them to move around Schengen?
So, I mean, it's the whole EU, so Schengen, non-Schengen, with obviously the exception of the Irish Republic, which is in a different status. So what happens is every time you travel, you start clocking up another period of 180 days for your 90 to be working out. You'll get your passport stamp when you cross a border. Obviously, you don't get more passport stamps when you cross within Schengen. You just move around within that. So you have to watch it if you come over quite a lot and go to lots of different countries, and you can't sort of get out of the 90 days by doing 85 days in Spain and then going and spending a week in Italy, things like that. Yeah. So it's a bit like the way the rules used to work. I know for tax purposes, when I worked in Spain, you were sort of having to make sure you didn't sort of, you know, inadvertently spend too much time back in the UK to still count as a taxpayer in Spain. And then there were questions about, you know, do the days on which you travel count? Is that only when you spend nights over there? So I would be checking out the rules to see if you think you're coming anywhere close.
Presumably, if you've spent 90 days in Schengen and then you get back to the UK and you fancied sort of some more time in a warmer climate, you could go to Croatia, Romania, Bulgaria, somewhere that isn't in Schengen, even if it's in the EU.
No, I don't think it's Schengen. I think it's the EU 27.
Okay.
Or the EU 26. So I don't think you can just go to Croatia. You could, of course, go to, I don't know where else might appeal, Albania. Go down to
why not?
Australia or New Zealand. South America and things like that. But I think it's not a Schengen thing. I think it's an EU 27 thing. But do check that out, because you keep on saying, not precisely expert on that. But the agreement, it's you're treated the so check. Don't turn up in Croatia saying I'm okay. You're not in Schengen. So anyway,
More generally, now that we're out, and of course it's all the sunny uplit lands. What can we do, the UK? What can we do now that we couldn't do before? That's a big question.
And that's a question where we don't really quite know what we can do. So the thing that the government's making a big song and dance about this weekend, it's making a big song and dance about two things this weekend. The first thing it's making a big song and dance about is that it is now zero rating women's sanitary products, the tampon tax. It couldn't introduce new zero rates when we were in the EU. The sort of zero rates we had when we entered the VAT regime was sort of frozen aspect forever, and you couldn't actually take things out of a zero rate and then put them back in. So the government's now used that. Now, that's a flexibility it looks as though it would have had anyway from 2022 with the new VAT directives coming in, which are more flexible. But the government's making a lot of the fact that it's doing that a bit earlier than it otherwise could have done. It misses out the bit earlier bit and just says it's doing it and couldn't have done it in the EU. So that's the first thing. The second thing that they're making
Can I just ask you on that? So am I right in understanding that the rules then in the EU are you need to put VAT on, you can't have zero VAT, but there's a bandwidth. So some countries might be 21, 23%, some are 19%, but you can't have it at zero. Is that what you're saying?
So the way in which the EU to date has allowed you to have a reduced rate band, between sort of 5% and 10% or something like that. And then you have to have a standard rate, which is no lower than 15%. You're not allowed to have a super rate of VAT, so you can't have a sort of 50% rate, the sort of things we used to see when we had an old-fashioned thing called purchase tax yonks ago. So that's the sort of basic VAT structure. Now, some countries, notably the UK and Ireland, I think are the big two that did this, had some zero rates on things like food, passenger transport. Ireland apparently has it on church candles. I found that out yesterday because I was tweeting about that, so who knew? But there were slightly motley mix of things, children's clothes, children's shoes and things like that. We used to have a zero rate here in the UK on fuel and power, but that was changed when the Conservatives moved it out of the zero rate ban. They moved it. We were going to move it up in two stages to standard rate it and had a parliamentary revolt. So it got stuck at 8% and then got taken down to 5%. So the UK now has a 15% rate, a 5% rate of VAT, a 20% rate as its standard rate, a 5% reduced rate and zero. But we have a sort of selection of goods which have never had VAT on them. So those are our zero-rated goods. But we haven't been able to create new zero rates. So that's the
doesn't
thing.
It doesn't seem like much of a win. In Spain, for example, masks, face masks that people are obliged to wear, the VAT on those has been reduced from 21% or whatever it was to 4% in November. So it doesn't seem like much of a win, it has to be said, you know, on a packet of tampons. I know they're important things. But,
Well, it's always been a bit of an anomaly. I used to be in the Chancellor of Exchequer's office, and we did get quite a lot of letters about this, and we used to write back these sort of quite defensive letters saying, well, we didn't zero rate other things that men used, and I think the example we used to give was soap, which I always thought was a bit weird. Maybe we should have given shaving foam, but even that would be a bit sexist. But then at the end of the day, we'd say, but the EU doesn't let us do it anyway. And actually, that's been quite a useful defence mechanism from chancellors to stop people lobbying for lots of things being moved down into, yeah, the EU's also been slightly restrictive on what you can reduce rate. But the EU is lightening up on that. So that's one thing. The other thing that the government's making a bit of a song and dance about this weekend is banning pulse fishing. And pulse fishing seems to be a thing that we could have banned but hadn't banned within our 12 metres of our shore. The French apparently had already done that, as I think maybe the Danes or the Dutch had done. But we couldn't do it in our wider waters, and now we appear to be banning pulse fishing. The other thing the government says it's doing, I mean, the two big things, the Prime Minister was on TV yesterday, pointing out free ports as something that he could now do. People then point back and say, well, actually, you can do free ports while you're an EU member. But he has said we can do free ports better. We don't know quite what better is going to look like.
Including Shannon, yeah.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of them around. But the value of free ports really depends on the value of tariffs and values of, you know, what regulations you can do. So let's see how that plays out. The UK used to have free ports and got rid of them about 8 years ago on the grounds they weren't doing much. And mainly, most economists would say they mainly divert activity rather than create new activity. But anyway, let's see where that goes. The other thing that the government has been pointing to is potentially banning live animal exports, which has been something I think the animal welfare lobby has been going through, but it hasn't actually brought through measures to do that yet. So there are sort of some things that there are signs of divergence. The other thing that, of course, we're now doing is moving, may not affect very many people listening to you, but we're certainly in England quite radically over time changing the basis of payments to farmers. The UK has long been a critic of the Common Agricultural Policy, and in England we're starting quite a long transition over to payments for public goods. And of course, the other thing, the very big divergence as of the 1st of January was the introduction of the new global migration regime, the points-based regime, which means that people coming here just with EU passports now have to apply in the same way as anyone coming in from another third country. So that's the big other divergence.
Jill,
that's the one that's going to have the most economic effect.
Jill, it's been a bit chaotic, the programme at the beginning before you came on, but we're out of time because I need to put an ad block in. But really appreciate this. This has been the last one in this series, and I hope we can make it a sort of regular thing, not necessarily every week because of your time. That would be great for us. But I'll speak to you anyway. I'll speak to you within the next couple of days, and maybe we can do something when there's some big development, that sort of thing.
Yep. Be
great.
A pleasure. Anyway, see you.
Muchas gracias. And thanks for all of your help over these last few weeks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jill. Bye-bye.
TRE, Talk Radio Europe.
Talk Radio Europe presents Countdown to Brexit.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.